And from high atop the cliffs of beautiful Bodega Bay, it's a sunshiny day, and you are listening to the HR Examiner Radio Hour. And from high atop the cliffs of Whoa, Nelly! I don't know how you stop this.
Hello?
Well, hello! Oh, this is great. This is great, great, great. Hello out there in Radio Land. I have no idea what you're getting out of this right now. But this is the... Oh, come on. Hang in there, beautiful radio world. So, hello out there at Radio Land. This is the HR Examiner Radio Show. Hey there, beautiful radio world. Heather, I don't know how to stop this, so let's see what happens.
Okay.
Well, my special guest today is Heather Bussing. She's the editor of the HR Examiner Advisory Board.
So let's see what happens.
Okay.
Now, this is not going to work. Hang in there. Hang in there.
Well, my special guest today is Heather Bussing.
So does it do that if I talk? Maybe I should just talk the whole half hour. Hello? I've completely lost you. I can't hear anything that you're doing. Okay, so this is Heather Bussing. I'm an employment lawyer in California. I practice labor and employment law and deal with all of the issues involving hiring, mostly firing, social media. I also teach internet law and legal writing at Empire School of Law here in Northern California. And I am here to talk about legal issues in recruiting. So let's see if John has made it back yet. Apparently not. Okay, well, the first question John was going to ask me, if the technology had been working, is...
Yes, I'm with you, Heather. How are you?
Oh, great. Hi there.
Hi there. So are you there?
I'm here. I'm right here.
Oh, okay. So if you've hung in there with us, this is the HR Examiner Radio Hour, and it's brought to you by DICE, the technical career space. And with us today is Heather Bussing, who I believe has probably already introduced herself, and we are...
I did.
We are learning about internet radio technology in real time. So, Heather, let's get straight to the meat of this. What's the dumbest thing that somebody can do when they're recruiting?
Oh, besides hire the wrong person?
Exactly. Besides hire the wrong person.
Okay. Well, the biggest legal issues that I'm seeing, and it's always worse at the beginning of the year when new laws go into effect, are that recruiters and companies who are hiring employees don't know which laws apply to the people that they're hiring. And so most big companies now have multiple offices in multiple states, and they just rock along believing that the law where they are headquartered is the law that applies. And the reality is that every state has its own really weird and different laws. So it's not just the federal discrimination laws. Each state also has its own laws about discrimination and employment contracts and wages and hours and non-competes. And the law that applies to each employee is the law of the state where the employee lives and works. So if you're a big company and you have employees in 10 different states, you have to understand and account for and deal with 10 different sets of laws. And there are states, especially California, who have really, really different, crazy, wild laws. So for example, California has the broadest number of protected classes. So it's not just the Title VII or the ADA. They also protect sexual orientation. In January of this year, two new protected classes were added. One is religious dress and grooming, so you can no longer discriminate against people because of particular religious dress or grooming standards that they have as a spiritual practice. And breastfeeding mothers are also now a protected class. And there are specific requirements for nursing moms at work about providing them a place to nurse where that is not the bathroom. So understanding what laws apply to the candidates and the process is key.
So if I'm hiring, let me ask you, if I'm hiring somebody who is working for me remotely in California, and my offices are in Omaha, let's say, am I required to follow the employment laws of California?
Yes. And
really?
It includes not just discrimination laws, but all of the wage and hour laws, so when employees get paid, what information has to be on their paychecks, everything that relates to payment, hiring, firing, discrimination, sometimes benefits.
So if I'm a virtual employer, I'm a virtual employer, but virtually not.
Right. Because employees still have bodies that are still in geographic and legal places.
Got it. So how do you stay on top of all that stuff? I mean, if I'm looking to put together a team that has the best people in the business and they're located around the country in various spaces and I house them or I don't house them, how do I stay on top of all those conflicting regulations?
Well, you have to figure out what they are and have somebody stay on top of that, either in-house or have resources or lawyers in each of those states to be able to consult when problems arise.
Wow, that's amazing. Would it be useful to do something like manage everybody to the worst case? So if California has the most stringent employment laws, if you managed everybody to the most stringent employment laws, would that be a way to cut through the stuff? Or are there things that are so conflicted that California isn't the worst case? It's just the worst case in some areas.
Well, I would say it's fairly safe to say that if you are in compliance with California wage hour and discrimination laws, you're going to be in compliance with probably 90% of laws in other states, because California is the most liberal. But different states have quirky, different little laws. So for example, Connecticut has freedom of speech at work, and no other states that I know of have that right. You know, freedom of speech is generally only applies when the government is involved, and so where the government is trying to restrict your speech, and employers are free to restrict what you say and don't say within certain limitations. And I think we're going to get to that later with the social media stuff. But in Connecticut, employees do have certain free speech rights. So even if you complied with all of California's laws, but you still have Connecticut employees, you could still run into trouble. So it's a quagmire. Some of it can probably be done with software and software updates, for example, you know, payroll and wage hour stuff. But the laws are constantly changing, so even that is not a sure bet.
Boy, it sounds like a money making machine designed by lawyers for lawyers. That's quite an accomplishment. I have no idea. You know the business of staying on top of that, so that you don't get in trouble in your recruiting processes, it's no small challenge. What would you ask an applicant tracking systems provider to help you with if you were thinking about using an applicant tracking system to manage the recruiting in a multi-state operation? What kinds of things would you want them to tell you?
Well, you would definitely want to know what classes are protected classes, because you're going to want to need to track that information, since that's one of the primary functions of applicant tracking. And it's not just states. I mean, some cities also have additional protected classes. So for example, the city of San Francisco, California protects sexual orientation. The city of San Francisco protects transgender. So you can't discriminate if you have employees in San Francisco and they're transgender. Minneapolis also has its own sort of EEO code in Minnesota, and they have a separate agency that handles discrimination claims that arise in the city of Minneapolis. So you need, you know, if you're an applicant tracking company, you need people on top of all of the laws and all of the changes, and need to stay on top of pending laws working through legislatures as well, because there's employment laws is a very quick changing area of the law. A perfect example is when the brouhaha happened this fall over employers asking for Facebook passwords. I've never seen laws get passed so fast, and now I think 6 or 8 different laws of different states have laws that say employers cannot ask potential candidates for their social media passwords.
That's interesting. So let's take a break and remind everybody that you're listening to the HR Examiner Radio Hour. The hashtag is #HRX. We're coming to you from Bodega Bay, California. We're brought to you by Dice, and very thankful for Dice's sponsorship. And we're talking to Heather Bussing, the editor of the HR Examiner Editorial Advisory Board and the most plain-spoken employment lawyer you are ever going to run across. So let's dig into social media and recruiting, because there certainly is a huge range of opinion about what's legal and what's not legal to do in social media recruiting. How do you cut through that stuff?
Well, it's really hard because a lot of it is still up in the air. And we talked a few minutes ago about how generally employees do not have free speech at work, but the National Labor Relations Board has come out in three different advisory opinions and said being able to talk about wages, hours, and working conditions, including complaining about your boss, is protected concerted activity under the National Labor Relations Act. And that law applies to both union and non-union employers. So it actually applies to everyone because the ability to discuss wages, hours, and working conditions is one of the fundamental threshold organizing activities. And so it is very highly protected under labor law. So while you don't have free speech under the First Amendment, you do have some free speech rights under labor law to complain to other employees about wages, hours, and working conditions. If it's just sort of a solo rant and not designed to change something or to get other people involved in thinking about wages, hours, and working conditions, then it's not necessarily protected. But the lines there are very blurry. They depend on case-by-case facts, and it's really hard to figure out.
So let me ask you a question about that, because we're digging at the recruiting question. So I go, you're applying to me for a job, and I go to your Facebook page, and it looks like you're complaining very loudly about your boss and the working conditions at your current job. If
right.
I don't hire you, am I in trouble?
I don't think so. That's a great question. I haven't really thought about it. But I think, I don't know. That's a,
right.
that's a really great question.
So have we come up with a new protected class, whiners on Facebook?
Maybe. Maybe. You know, generally it comes up in the context of the current employer disciplining or terminating the employee for complaining. And I don't know the answer about whether somebody would, whether it's protected, concerted, and you could bring an action against a prospective employer for not hiring you because you were complaining about your old employer.
So this is what I like about working with you, Heather. The notion that a lawyer in a public place would actually say, "I don't know," is, I think, going to be foreign to our listeners. And it would be a great qualifying question if you're recruiting a lawyer is, do you know when it's time to say you don't know?
Right, exactly.
So let's back away from what you don't know and on to what you do know. So I'm recruiting people, and I'm surfing through all sorts of social media stuff. And I come upon one of our candidates, and the picture clearly shows me that this person is handicapped in some way.
Okay.
Have I just done something wrong?
No. No, not it's not it's improper and illegal to make hiring decisions based on a protected class. So if you don't hire them because you're too afraid of having to accommodate their disability, then yes, that's illegal. But just simply knowing the information is not illegal at all. And in fact, with the changes in technology and the availability of photographs and all sorts of other information that's publicly out there on the internet, we're coming to the end of the days when employers can claim that they didn't know this information about candidates. So the conventional wisdom to date has been try to avoid knowing that anybody is in a protected class for as long as possible, because then you can claim that you didn't discriminate because you didn't know. But that's no longer going to work because it's just not credible. The information's out there. And the truth is that the real hiring decisions happen at the interview level and beyond. That's when the candidate knows that they're being seriously considered for a job, and that's when the employer is making the significant decisions about who's in and who's out. And the minute somebody walks in the door, you learn about all sorts of protected classes, including race, national origin, pregnancy, gender, and lots of others potentially. So the idea that you can pretend not to know this information is just silly.
Okay, so the wisdom about what you do in the hiring process is changing from put your head in the sand to pull your head out of your behind. Is that a fair summary?
That's a really fair summary.
That's great. So what else do you see popping up along the highway? I'm starting to notice all sorts of new bits and pieces of information that you can use to distinguish one candidate from another. Does that ever run the risk of becoming discriminatory? So if I want to hire somebody based on their clout score or the extent of their network or those sorts of things, are we getting beyond meritorious stuff and into discrimination, or am I misunderstanding how discrimination works?
There's nothing that's inherently discriminatory about hiring someone based on their clout score. It might be a really, really stupid idea, because unless you're hiring a social media manager, people with really high clout scores are spending way too much time on social media, probably. So maybe you want to hire somebody with a really bad clout score because they're busy working. But I can see some creative lawyer coming up with a disparate impact argument. There's this window of time that we have, probably for another 15 minutes or so, where not everybody has access to all types of technology. So the Pew Research people keep track of who is using the internet and on what devices. And right now, minorities have much lower use of personal computers and laptops, but they are accessing the internet on mobile phones, smartphones. So I suppose while that disparity exists, assuming that there is some difference between accessing the internet on mobile versus computers, you might be able to make some argument that if you hire somebody based on their clout score, it could have a disparate impact on minorities because they don't have as much access to the internet. But like I said, I think that argument is good for another 15 minutes or so.
Okay, so let me get to a next thing that I recall you having a smart opinion about, and that is because so I'm a recruiter. I review your Facebook profile. I notice that you are an uppity woman, and I make sure that you don't get hired. How in the world would you ever find out about that?
People get hired because the recruiter or the person interviewing them thinks they're a bitch all the time. You know, being a jerk is perfectly legitimate grounds for rejection and not discriminatory. And it would be lovely if people would be clearer about that in their notes. I thought she was really mean and awful, and I hated her shoes. Those are all legal reasons to not hire someone. But the truth is that most people in the applicant process never know why they were not taken to the interview level or not ultimately hired. And that information is pretty hard to get. And it's really hard to find a lawyer who's going to take an individual claim based on a fishing expedition that they might be able to subpoena files and get some sort of information about discrimination. It doesn't happen very much. And until you get to hiring practices that have an impact on a particular group, they're hard cases to bring, and they're very hard cases to win.
Do they get brought on pure mercenary grounds that being brought provides a gateway to a settlement? So is that the flaw in that position that you just wrote?
People file lawsuits all the time for extortion or revenge or to be mean or to punish somebody, and sometimes those lawsuits have a decent legal argument. Many times they don't, and one of the problems with our legal system is that we give everybody a voice and a fair chance, and the process to then bring another lawsuit saying the first lawsuit was frivolous is so onerous and expensive that that there's really no checks on bringing those types of lawsuits. There are technically, but they're not effective.
So I think in the last 10 minutes or so, you have contradicted the advice that most of our audience is getting from their in-house lawyers almost 100%. Right? You said you can't discriminate particularly actively by using social media because you know what you know, that the reality is people don't really bring lawsuits on a regular basis and that the data is hard to get, so you shouldn't be intimidated by things that are in the potential area. How do people work with you? I mean, that's a refreshing view.
Well, I try to get people to work with me at the beginning so that I can help them figure out what they want to do to run a good place to work and to have a great business. And I'm here to answer questions and prevent problems, but I'm not all about risk management. And I think there are a lot of really good employment lawyers out there that really want to help companies run great businesses and have a bigger view than, oh my God, this could be a lawsuit. Because scurrying around and being afraid of lawsuits is a distraction to running a good business and having a great place to work.
So I think you just heard it. In summary, Heather Bussing, for the last half hour with technical difficulties, has been laying the groundwork for the case that the best way to be conscious of employment law is to build a great place to work. I want to thank you for being on the show today, Heather. It's been fantastic. You can see Heather's work at the HR Examiner. She writes a legal piece every Monday. And this is the HR Examiner Radio Hour from Bodega Bay, California. I'm your host, John Sumser, and we are brought to you by Dice. Next week, we'll have Kelly Robinson from Broadbean on to talk about how to most effectively utilize job boards. Thanks, everybody. Have a great day. We'll be right back.